Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay from Chicago, Illinois, and I'll be the host for our presentation today. And today is Sunday, December 28th, 2025. Let me give you the share ID numbers for Friday, December 26th. They are the following: for the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting on Friday, that number is 23,066. That's 23066. And for the 10 a.m. meeting on Friday, 23,067. That's 23067. This morning, A Vision for You presents All Inclusive. So our presenter is going to share about her spiritual journey, her personal journey, where OA ultimately provided a safe haven of recovery through inclusivity. So looking forward to that. You know, desperation is what drives us to the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. And for most of us, by the time we arrived here, we tried everything within our power to control and enjoy our eating. We wanted to minimize it, but we wanted to still have it. And so we get here, and like a gut punch, we learn that no amount of human willpower can pull us from the quicksand of this disease. And you told us that lack of power was our dilemma. We couldn't generate our own power. We needed to access power, but we couldn't generate it. And that meant that nothing we could conceive of, that no action marshaled by our own human will, was going to give us sustainable mastery over food and these related behaviors. Personal willpower, you know, different ethical codes, different morals weren't going to do it. Nor would even greater devotion to religious practices, because many of us had those in great measure, but that wasn't enough. In fact, no matter how bad we wanted or needed a solution, we couldn't bring it about of our own accord, of our own willpower. And so the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is our foundational text, because it introduces us to what is necessary to access power. Plain and simple. That's why we study this text, because it works. It's a blueprint. It's a map. In fact, the first 164 pages of the book provides a sequential roadmap that outlines how to work the 12 steps. Everything else is ancillary to that. And when we follow those instructions precisely, this results in a spiritual transformation. You call it a psychic change. It's revolutionary in nature. And that means that this change has to happen at depth. We must undergo a profound internal shift in our thinking. And the Big Book calls this profound alteration, again, a psychic change. It happens at a spiritual level. And the book's going to explain why an alcoholic needs a power greater than oneself, how to form and build upon that relationship with power. If we want to achieve this permanent state of sobriety, moving from a hopeless state to freedom and serenity. And AA's founders believed in an all-inclusive fellowship. We're going to hear about that from Darian this morning, because they recognize that alcoholism, in our case, compulsive overeating, affects everyone. It doesn't matter where you come from. No one comes here and asks you for a bank statement, a CV, a resume, nothing like that. We're not exclusive. We need each other. And so this is the common, got a common problem and a common solution. And nobody cares about your background. There's no performance necessary here. So joining us this morning to share her experience, strength, and hope is Darian Kay. I'm going to spell Darian, D-A-R-I-A-N, I have, Darian K, and she's a recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. Darian, did I spell that right?
Yes, you did. Perfect.
Okay, D-A-R-I-A-N. Folks ask about that because they like to look you up and all that stuff. But Darian's from Massachusetts, and I've known Darian, and she's terrific, and she's dedicated to the 12 steps and 12 traditions as a way of life. So it's with much gratitude that we welcome Darian Kay to the line this morning. Good morning, Darian.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you so much. Well, good morning, everybody. So glad to be here with all of you. And Yes, I'm sitting in my jammies, got a fire going. It's just lovely. And just excited, nervous, but very grateful to be able to share on the line with you about all-inclusive. And the first thing I want to do, and some of my friends that I've spoken to have already heard this, so it's not going to be as funny, but, what do you think of first when you hear all-inclusive? And, you know, I'm sure many of you are thinking because Larry shared so beautifully about the program being inclusive. But what I thought of, and here's my play on words, is a vacation that's all-inclusive, right? All you can eat, all you can drink. That's what I thought of before program. That would have been the free-for-all, you know, the excuse to legally binge, you know, with everyone else and not feel as shameful as I would doing it alone for no apparent reason. It was just about indulgence, right? Life was about indulgence. And when you could indulge with the masses, it surely felt a lot less crazy. And, you were with others. But most of the time, you know, we were alone. We were alone in that. And, it is funny, but it's true that was my first thought. But today I'm so grateful for these 12 steps and the 12-step program that we have that talks about inclusivity. I looked up inclusivity in the dictionary, as, you know, we like to do here, and it says the practice of providing equal opportunities and resources for people who might otherwise be excluded or marginalized. And it also talked about promoting a culture of respect and acceptance. I think that says it beautifully. That's what inclusivity is. And we are all included and should feel safe here, you know, through our anonymity, that we belong. We all belong, no matter where you're coming from. We belong, and it's just a beautiful thing. You know, our OA literature emphasizes inclusion. In the big book, Forward to the Fourth Edition, it says, when the phrase, we are people who normally would not mix, that's on page 17 of the book, was written in 1939, it referred to a fellowship composed largely of men and a few women with quite similar social, ethnic, and economic backgrounds. And like so much of AA's basic text, those words have proved to be far more visionary than the founding members could ever have imagined. In any AA meeting, anywhere, AA shares experience, strength, and hope with each other in order to stay sober and help other alcoholics. Modem to modem, or face to face, AA speaks the language of the heart in all its power and simplicity. And then also in the 12 and 12, pages 139 and 141, it talks about tradition 3. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. This tradition is packed with meaning. For AA is really saying to every serious drinker, you are an AA member if you say so. You can declare yourself in. Nobody can keep you out. No matter who you are, no matter how long you've gone, no matter how grave your emotional complications. And also it talked about, why did AA finally drop all its membership regulations? And I guess it had some in the beginning. The answer now seen in Tradition 3 was simplicity itself. At last, experience taught us that to take away any alcoholic's full chance was sometimes to pronounce his death sentence, and often to condemn him to endless misery. Who dared to be judge, jury, and executioner of his own sick brother? And then in the OA 12 and 12 traditions pamphlet, it says a person is a member if they have a desire to overcome their compulsion. There is a place and a way for each of us. Here we are free to be ourselves and be accepted. Of course, before talking about inclusion and citing other various text passages, I felt the need to talk about how I felt before program. And I wanted to highlight some of those feelings of exclusion. You know, exclusion is defined by deliberately and painfully left out. And that's how I felt before program. The 12 and 12 on page 57 says, almost without exception, alcoholics are tortured by loneliness. Even before our drinking got bad and people began to cut us off, nearly all of us suffered the feeling that we didn't quite belong. And also in Bill's story on page 8, he says, no words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in the bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. So for me, you know, those were the feelings I had. Being in a heavy body all my childhood and my young adult years, you know, I just felt out of place. Just did not fit in. I was on diet after diet with my mom from an early age. And I'd say that was definitely a place I felt excluded. I was really the youngest person in the room, surrounded by adults, sharing recipes and trying to lose weight. And, you know, it was just, I felt very weird. It was weird being there, but I went because I wanted some kind of solution. Or maybe my mom wanted it for me. I think probably back then it wasn't, didn't really come from me inside. And I never felt like I fit into any group. You know, in my day in the 70s, we had brains and jocks and druggies and earthy crunchies and nerds. And, you know, I was a follower by nature, but I had no idea who to follow or how to find it. You know, I didn't fit into any of those groups. I didn't really want to in some of them, but at least it was a group, right? So, you know, I share my story when I qualify usually that the band was my group. I fit into the band. It was just a group of misfit kids who didn't care who you were, you know, or who you weren't. And, you know, I didn't join because I loved music and I really wanted to play a particular instrument. Nope, just wanted to fit in somewhere. And they accepted me as a heavy kid. You know, they just thought I was cool. And so it was, you know, it was just a place I could be for a couple of years in junior high, actually. But eventually, that became uncool in high school, so I quit. So it was, you know, it was not a, like I said, a reason. There was no real reason except to sort of be a part of a group. Gym class. Gym class was painful, you know, physically and emotionally. Oh, my goodness. I was one of the few who couldn't finish the fitness run. I don't know if anybody remembers that. I think it was, I don't know, 3 miles? I don't know what it was. But, you know, I had excruciating pain in my legs and in my sides, and I was the last one trucking up the track by myself. Felt so out of place and so, yeah, so lonely. You know, climbing the ropes are ridiculous. There's no way I could do that, but. And everybody was watching you, you know, and being picked, you know, last for a team, you know, just felt lonely, you know, and deliberately left out like I had a disability. And if you think about it, I had a disability. I did. My disability was being overweight. And so, but it wasn't, people didn't feel bad for you. It was more like, you know, oh, well, you know, just stop eating or whatever, go on a diet and lose some weight, or you have such a beautiful face, if only you could lose weight, blah, blah, blah. You know, I came from a divorced family in the 70s. That was odd, if anyone can believe that today. And so I felt different, you know, and people people tend to avoid you when you were coming from a divorced family. I'm not sure why. Was it catchy or something? I don't know. But that's how people treated you. And, you know, when I was growing up, I took hostages instead of boyfriends. You know, it was like if you showed me attention, you paid attention to me, I would be with you forever. I just didn't want to feel alone or lonely, you know? And so there was really no rhyme or reason for the people I dated. And I can look back at that and see that clearly today. But, you know, it was just a matter of, oh, you know, thank you for paying attention to me. I'm yours forever. In the doctor's opinion, it says men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. And for me, food played a very important part of my life. You know, it filled that void of loneliness. It was love. It was security. It was happiness. It was consistency, you know, in an inconsistent household. It was escape, you know, escaping the reality of life. It was friendship. Food was my friend. I could count on it. It was there for me. It was celebration. My God, I have pictures of pictures of things we got every year for my birthday because it was what was done every year. And tradition, you know, I'm of the Jewish faith, and the only part of the celebrations, the Jewish holidays, were the food that I remember, the traditional food that was served, and not the reason behind the holidays. And I never felt full, ever. You know, I was not born with that ability to say, oh, I've had enough. You know, I need to stop eating. I just always wanted more. You know, seconds were habitual. It was just like, if it tasted good, of course you had more. Of course you had seconds. And then maybe thirds if it was really good. So, you know, I just always, you know, makes sense to me when people talk about the disease and more. Yes, yes. And in this case, surely the food. And it was always comparing and despairing. You know, people always looked like they had it all. You know, they were prettier. They had the cool clothes. Everything was cool, you know. And I'll get to that. I felt, well, in the employers, to the employers on page 145, it says, the greatest enemy of us alcoholics are resentment, jealousy, envy, frustration, and fear. And envy and jealousy kept me feeling excluded. Definitely, you know, that's what I was talking about. First of all, I wanted a mom and a grandma who were good cooks. I remember that, thinking that, like, oh, I'm going to be such a good cook when I grow up because my mom is not a good cook. She made hockey puck hamburgers because everything had to be well done. And, you know, they shrunk to like this, you know, dime-sized burger. You know, and my grandmother, oh, God bless her, you know, she tried, but she made every dessert was sweet and low because she was always trying to keep her little figure. So, you know, it was, food was not tasty. I mean, it was, my mom had a few things that she did okay, but, you know, I was just in my mind going to be, you know, the best cook because she just was not it. And, you know, I envied the neighbors, who had parents. Or moms especially in those days, that cooked and baked and, you know, made all these treats that were just amazing. And boy, I consumed them when I visited my friends. you know, I wanted a bigger house. I grew up in a ranch house in West Peabody, and I wanted a bigger house. I wanted an upstairs. We didn't have upstairs. We didn't have a basement. We had one bathroom. And it was, you know, it was small. And so I remember going to other people's homes and thinking, oh, this place is so huge. It's like a palace. I wanted also to shop in the cool stores. You know, it was in my blood that I was going to be a clothes horse. My mom loved clothes and makeup, so that was what I was going to be. And so in those days, Learners, hit or miss, 579 store, Forever 21, the limited. Those were all the stores I wanted to shop in so bad. But no, I could not grace those doors because they didn't have my size. And so instead, I got to shop at Lane Bryant and sometimes Sears, the chubby section. Those were my choices. Those, you know, the adult fat lady clothes were my choices in the 70s. And so that surely made me feel excluded from, you know, that world of fun when it came to, you know, wearing the cool clothes. And summer was especially difficult for me. I love summer. I love that season. Love the beach, love the water. But I always felt out of place, you know, going to the beach or the YMCA. We belong to the YMCA. And going to that pool and just watching, you know, young little kids running around. You know, they shouldn't have been running. They'd probably slip and fallen, but they were running around, their little bodies carefree, you know, mentality. And here I was. I had these fat thighs rubbed together, and, you know, I couldn't hide them, obviously, in a bathing suit. And, you know, I couldn't feel free. I couldn't feel free to be me. You know, I'm sure I had fun, but I just wanted to be one of those little teeny, you know, kiddos that were running around. I was also one of the few Jewish kids in the neighborhood. You know, so for me, no lights, no tree, no Santa. You know, it wasn't terrible because I just didn't know. You know, that's just not how I grew up. But it still, you know, made me feel excluded. You know, well, when you grow up in a neighborhood surrounded by all of that. And although that was the case, I just added this little note that I did stencil. We spray stenciled. I don't know if you remember the snow that you could spray on your windows. And we stenciled a menorah and some Jewish stars on my front door. And the Peabody Times, our newspaper, came and took a picture of me, put it in the paper. So that was cool. But that's about all the decorations we did. And I remember my therapist telling me once, I don't remember when, but you know, he would say, "Oh, you're unique. You know, you're a person. You're unique." And I remember thinking, and this, you know, has carried with me all these years. I don't want to be unique. No, I don't want to be unique. I want to fit in. I want to be like everyone else. So, that's just how I felt, you know. And I'm sure there's many more things to cite, but those are some of the few things that I felt, you know, and that I'm sure many of us feel when we come in a bigger body and we're just out of place. We're out of place in so many situations. And we don't want to be that way, but we don't know any way out. It's just, I had no idea what to do, you know. And I didn't try that hard. Let's say that too. I mean, I wasn't the best dieter. I wasn't, you know, I can't say that I lost all this weight and got to my goal and, you know, felt the way that a thin person would feel ever, ever until I came to this program. I just didn't try. I didn't try. And the weekends were for eating, so why would I bother sticking to anything on the weekends and then get back on Monday and expect huge results? So just a joke, really. So those were the feelings of exclusion. Like I said, I'm sure there's more, but I just wanted to highlight a few. But the feeling of inclusion and program, you know, and that's my talk here. It's at my very first meeting, September 1986. I felt like people embraced me warmly with open arms and a desire to get to know me. And they said, "Welcome and come back." And I heard that. And I was like, "What? Wow. Like, this is pretty awesome." And this was in a room of 200 people or more, sometimes standing room only. It was at a Sunday morning meeting. on the North Shore, and I was excited to travel long distances to get there because at that time I think I lived on the South Shore. But I traveled long distance there, and I felt a part of immediately. I felt like a fellow amongst fellows, a member who shared the same disease. And I can be offered the same recovery if I chose to follow certain suggestions made by these people who seem so contented and happy. It was like, wow, this is different. This is awesome. My very first sponsor was my sister's sponsor because that's what we did. Again, I'm the follower, so I got her sponsor. But she gave freely of her time. She guided me toward the steps while using the tools on a daily basis. That was my program. You do those steps, Darian, and then the tools are daily. To keep you in check. When I shared my first fourth step, I went to that meeting of 200 people again on a Sunday, and we thought we would attend part of the meeting because it was a 90-minute meeting. 3 hours later, we were still sitting in the hospital cafeteria talking and sharing our common stories, and so much of it was a sharing, two-way sharing. Yes, I shared my fourth step and the things that I had written and the things I needed to get out and talk about, and oh, so scared that she would not like me or she'd think, oh, my terrible person. But she shared back with me similar situations, if not more tragic or more, awe-inspiring. And it was like, wow. I felt heard. I felt accepted. And most of all, I felt included. I was not alone in my disease anymore. I was not a misfit. I found my group, my home, my peeps. And it just felt so good. I had the privilege of sharing many joys in program, since coming in, obviously at 24 years old. when I got married in 1987. After joining program, a year prior, OA members came. A few OA members came to celebrate. They came to my bridal shower. I have pictures of that. And when my daughter Nikki was born in 1991, OA members came, and were there for me throughout my pregnancy. And were delighted to meet my baby girl, who is now 34. And, I would bring her to meetings too, I would carry around a meeting. Sometimes the meetings had babysitting, so they knew Nikki from the inception. And I also navigated through sorrowful times in this program, of course. We're going to have both if we're living our lives a day at a time. And growing up, per se, in this program, when my Nana died in 1988, OA members came to my home. They came to my home, when I was sitting Shiva, and supported me, brought me fruit baskets, I remember, and were there for me. They didn't know my grandmother. They didn't know my family, but they were there for me. I remember them coming and just supporting me, in a time that was so difficult. And when my mom died in 2016, again, OA fellows were present and available during one of the most challenging life events. I never thought, that I would get through that. And, so my sadness and my struggles were less painstaking because people in program were willing to listen and lessen my load. And it's just a beautiful thing. It's just people give of themselves so freely and willingly. And it's just beautiful. And I also can choose to believe in my own conception of God. A practical, caring form of love and goodness that is ever present for me anytime, anywhere. And that makes me feel like I'm included. Page 46 of the Big Book says, much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Excuse me, our own conception however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive, or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. Oh, thank you, God, right? Every meeting that I went to, they welcomed me with open arms and heart. People continue to give freely of their time. And it still amazes me how selfless and compassionate the people are in our program, how much time they give. You know, you're not my family of origin, but each and every one of you feel like my soul sisters and brothers. You know, just there's a soul feeling that I get when I speak to you guys and when I see you, and it's like no other. Page 124 in the 12 and 12 says the surety that we need no longer be square pegs in round holes, but can fit and belong in God's scheme of things. You know, just a beautiful thing. The 12 and 12 says, let's see, page 57, losing my voice, I knew I would. When we reached AA and for the first time in our lives stood amongst people who seemed to understand, the sense of belonging was tremendously exciting. We thought the isolation problem had been solved. But we soon discovered that while we weren't alone anymore in social sense, we still suffered many of the old pangs of anxious apartness. Until we had talked with complete candor of our conflicts and had listened to someone else to do the same thing, we still didn't belong. Step 5 was the answer. It was the beginning of a true kinship with man and God. So I added that because I can still feel excluded and isolated, you know. But when I do, it's of my own doing. You know, it's not because it's really happening. It's of my own doing. I'm not a perfect member of OA, nor will I ever be one. There are days when my well runs dry, and I forget that an OA connection would be a really good thing. You know, like attending a meeting or making a call or writing my thoughts or calling my sponsor. I forget those things would lift me up out of that lonely place. I don't know why. Alas, I'm human and the mind forgets or falls into the comfort zone of apathy. You know, I really think that's me in a nutshell. So thank goodness for newcomers. I need to say that, you know, any newcomers, if you're on the line today with us, Welcome. You are the people that are so precious and important to us people that have been around a while. You know, I hope that you feel an immediate sense of belonging. You know, you give me that feeling of enthusiasm. You know, you keep my program fresh and you help me remember where I was coming from and ground me in my program. You know, I hope all of you keep coming and sharing your stories, because it's just so important, you know, for all of us to feel welcome here. Page 152 in the Big Book says, yes, there is a substitute, and it's vastly more than that. It is a fellowship of alcoholics. There you will find release from care and boredom and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will be something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. How is that to come about, you ask? Where am I to find these people? You're going to meet these new friends in your own community. Near you, alcoholics are dying helplessly like people in a sinking ship. If you live in a large place, there are hundreds, high and low, rich and poor. These are future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. Among them, you will make lifelong friends. And I have made lifelong friends here that I cherish like no others. It's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. You will be bound to them with new and wonderful ties, for you will escape disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey. Then you will know what it means to give of yourself, that others may survive and rediscover life. You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. And today, I looked this up today in AA, there's at least 123,000 groups globally and 100,000 weekly meetings in 70 languages. In OA, we're in 80 countries and translated in 48 languages. It's incredible to think about, you know. This program is here for all of us. It's really just a beautiful, beautiful, constant, giving, loving place to be, you know. And so I will end by reading what we'd love to read, excuse me, in this meeting at the end, the very last section from the Big Book, page 164. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. And I close. Thank you.
Thank you, Darian. Thank you so much for your vulnerability this morning. Kind of move from misfit to miracle. So we're truly appreciative of your presentation this morning. So before we transition to our Q&A, a couple of reminders. First, please stick around for Darian's contact information. That's going to be provided at the end of the recorded portion this morning. And then secondly, let me give you the share ID for the presentation this morning. That number is 23,068. That's 23068. So now let's transition to our Q&A. If you have a question for Darian K, that's D-A-R-I-A-N. If you have a question for Darian, questions only, please. Please unmute by pressing star one and give me your first name and we'll get going towards questions this morning. Who has a question?
Elizabeth D.
Gotcha, Elizabeth. Who else? Great time to pose a question to Darian.
Elizabeth D.
Okay, I got Elizabeth D. Is there another Elizabeth or is that the same Elizabeth?
Yeah, another one. C is in Charlie.
Another one. Oh, C, okay. I was like, wow, Elizabeth D twice. I heard around Elizabeth. Okay, can I get another Elizabeth? Let's make a trifecta here. No, anybody at all. Star one to unmute. Calling all Elizabeths. My favorite name. It's my daughter's name. All right, let's start with Elizabeth D, followed by Elizabeth C, and then we'll see if anybody else has a question. Elizabeth D, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. It's Elizabeth D. I'm a recovered compulsive eater. In Massachusetts, Darian, thank you so much for your share. I related to it from start to finish. And I think we have crossed paths at that North Shore 8:30 a.m. Sunday morning meeting that you spoke about. My question is to ask whether you have Actually, I have two questions. First, have you struggled with relapse during your recovery? And if you have, and I, you know, some do and some don't, Can you share a little bit about how you are able to emerge from a relapse cycle? And second, could you talk a little bit about the tools of the program and the steps of the program and how the two work together in your recovery journey? And I will silence myself and wait for the answer. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Elizabeth. Yes, and that it would be great to share on those things. I'm going to say that, you know, when you're in program for a while, and I've said this to other people too, sometimes you need to redefine your abstinence. Sometimes you need to, your abstinence evolves. It might not be exactly the same as day one, but very, very similar. And in life situations, because of course, you know, if you're almost in 40 years, you're going to go through life situations. And when there was a point in my program, it was around 1999-ish, you know, I was stretching my program, if you will. So I personally didn't consider it a relapse. And we're not here to judge. So it wasn't a relapse. It was stretching my program. I went out to dinner a few extra times in a week, or I made choices of certain foods that weren't necessarily healthy choices. And I put on some weight. I put on some weight, and I wasn't eating in between. I stopped also weighing and measuring. For me, I'm a quantity junkie. Like I said, I have the disease of more. That's just for me. You know, people do not choose to weigh and measure, and that's fine. I'm not going to judge. But for me, it was evident at that time that it was something I needed to do because I didn't know how to eyeball portion control. Why did I ever think I all of a sudden would be struck with that ability? I don't know. But I thought, oh, you know, I've been in for X number of years. I should probably know what 4 ounces looks like. And like I said, I put on weight. It was just, it blew my mind. It was just a crushing blow. And so I got a sponsor, started recommitting my food because at that time I didn't commit it daily like I did in the beginning. And so it was just sort of a tightening up of my program and going back to basics and simplicity. And, you know, the weight came back off. Thank you, God. I didn't know if that would happen for me again, but it did. And it just felt like I had more freedom, even though I thought that doing those things were freedom, if you will. And I'm sure many of you are nodding because we come from the same mold that, you know, it's not freedom. It's not freedom at all to just do whatever the heck we want. You know, it's freedom to do certain things and then live in between. And so that was my... you know, my struggle at that time in my program. You know, and then I continue to look at my food and look at my program. I'm getting older. I'm, you know, surely I never was active. I could be less active. And, you know, so I have to look at that stuff and sort of reevaluate and talk to a sponsor and shift some things, you know, that maybe worked before. So that's the story for me in that regard. With regard to the tools and the steps, you know, I heard someone, I didn't come up with this originally, but I heard that, you know, if you're in a rowboat, the steps are one of the oars. Well, the tools are one of the oars and the steps are one of the oars. So if you use just one oar, your boat's going to move. It might move around in a circle, but it's going to move. Mm-hmm. But if you use both the tools, I'm sorry, can you hear me okay?
Yeah,
we can hear you.
Oh, okay. If you use both the tools and the steps, your boat's going to move more fluid in a fluid forward motion. And that's how I look at that. You know, the tools, I mean, we're on a meeting. We're doing the meeting, the tool of meetings. We're on a phone call too. at the same time, we're doing that as well. You know, there are 9 beautiful tools in this program that exist for us to use that just help us to maintain our abstinence and to work the steps. And for me, it all works like just one big picture instead of being in parts of a picture or like a puzzle piece. It's a one big picture. And when I sponsor people that are brand new, I will say, you know, write down the tools. You know, that's what that you can grab onto in the very beginning of your program. Write down those 9 tools and check them off. Check off the ones that you did for the day. You know, it helps you feel good because you've got a list. For me, that makes me feel good when I check. But, you know, check off the tools that you can do while you're, you know, trying to get through the withdrawals and the abstinent, you know, craziness in the beginning. And that's what you can really utilize in the very beginning of the program. And then eventually, of course, the steps are, you know, it's a 12-step program. We need to do the steps. It's not just a tool-based program, yes. But to me, it's all inclusive again with the 12 steps and the 12 and the 9 tools. So that's that. Thank you for asking.
Thanks, Elizabeth D. Okay, next up is Elizabeth C. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Hi, thanks for your share, Darian. You just touched on this a little bit, but I'm wondering how or if your program has changed as your abstinence increases, or I don't know, maybe how you were challenged as you got more abstinence, and for me, as my like desperation kind of gets less intense, how you're tempted to change your program. And I don't know if that makes any sense, but if you need me to clarify, let me know. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. Like I said, we are human. We are human, and apathy, laziness, you know, those feelings of I got this, those are those 3 deadly words, I got this, can creep in to our heads. Or we can look out into the world and see people doing quick fixes, do a shot, you know, do a shot, do a drink, do a, I don't know, whatever's out there, pill, you know, and we can get caught up in that. I just try to keep my head where my feet are and pray. I mean, my higher power is everything in my program, you know. It's who I talk to in the morning. It's who I thank at night. And when those challenges come up, those human thoughts and feelings of wanting to change things or alter things, or I think I might know better, or so-and-so's doing such and such, so maybe I should try that. You know, no, it's just pulling the reins back and just getting in touch with my higher power and utilizing a sponsor as well, and just knowing that whatever I'm going through, you know, I mean, there's just, obviously you're going to go through life a day at a time. This program doesn't promise you, you know, ponies and rainbows, unfortunately, because I would absolutely adore that. It just, you know, we have things that are going to come up in our world that we are going to be sidelined by, or that we're going to be overjoyed by, and it didn't ever matter. I ate over all those things. Never too sad or happy to eat. And today, I just know I just need to bring those thoughts to another fellow and to my higher power, you know, and to really stick to the basics. I feel like the simple my program is, the better I am. And the more routine that I have in my program, the better I am. Even though it feels like, no, again, I gotta make my chop this and do that, whatever. It's better for me. You know, I'm on vacation this week from school, and so I think, this is great. You know, I'm gonna be on vacation. I'll sleep late and be lazy, whatever. But by the toward the end, it's working. I got to get back to, you know, what works best for me and this person right here, because that's not always what I think it is. So I hope that helps.
Thanks, Elizabeth C. Okay, there's more time for questions. If you have a question for Darian K., press star 1 and give me your name, and we'll pose those questions
Monica.
To Darian. Who has a question? Monica?
Monica S.
Uh-huh. Who else?
Sue L.
Sue L. Got Monica and Sue. Anybody else? Okay, let's go with Monica S. followed by Sue. Monica,
Sarah T.
Good morning. What question? Okay, I got you, Sarah. Anybody
Thanks.
Else? Monica,
Hoffman
Sue,
H.
and Sarah. I'm sorry, first name again?
Catherine H.
Oh, Catherine. Okay, thanks, Catherine. Anybody else? Okay. We got Monica, Sue, Sarah, and Catherine. Monica, what question do you have for Darian? Monica, press star 1.
Can you hear me now?
I can. You bet.
Okay. Thanks so much for your share. I guess my question is, I try to make phone calls regularly, but sometimes I like do not feel like it, making any phone calls in the day. I'll be honest. And I'm wondering, do you make calls to fellows? And if you do, like just in general, what do you like talk about? And do you have like a God squad, or do you just call random people? And then the second part of the question is like, when you kind of don't feel like making those calls, but you know you should, like, what do you do or what do you say to yourself to encourage yourself to make those calls? That's my thanks.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, it does feel like the phone can be 1,000 pounds sometimes. It's true. And not for any reason, really, because every time I've ever made a phone call to a fellow, it's lifted me up and made me feel 1,000 times better than maybe I did beforehand, or just reconfirmed my program. So there's no reason why it should be a difficult tool. But, you know, I try to make phone calls. I have a lot of different groups of people that I like to call. You know, I do like to call, obviously, people that I feel connected with. There might just be some people that you feel more connected with than others in this program, and that's okay. And so I tend to make a phone call, or I text. Sometimes I'll text, or I'll send a stupid meme. I'm just old and I like those memes. And, you know, just I'm thinking about you. And when that happens, you know, I listen to that little voice. If there's somebody I haven't seen at a meeting or haven't spoken to in a while, or haven't heard on the line, I'm encouraged in my heart, I guess. My heart, it's like a God tap to send that person a text, you know, say, I'm thinking about you, you know, haven't heard you in a while. It's just a nice thing to do, obviously. Sometimes we might not get an answer back, but it just gives me that connection. And, you know, so I like to do that. I like to... I really enjoy when I'm sitting. I don't always get this opportunity because I'm driving a lot of times when they announce newcomers in the morning because I'm on my way to work. But I really enjoy taking newcomers' names at the end of meetings. I try to do that when I'm on vacation because I want to reach out to those newcomers. You know, I want to give them a call. It's such a nice feeling, right, when we all first came in and we got bombarded by all these phone calls. It was so nice to think that people took the time to call us and took our phone number. So I do try to do that, you know, get their numbers of and do that as well on my meetings that I go to. If somebody announces themselves as a new person to the meeting or new to OA, I'll take their phone number and make a call to them, you know. And so that gives me a chance to, you know, connect with them and an excuse to make a phone call, per se. You know, in the beginning, I'm going to say, like, in the very beginning of program, my sponsor, for some reason, the number three, and it is a magical number in fairy tales, by the way, but the number three was a big deal. So I did three phone calls a day, three meetings a week, three meals a day, you know, and I read three books, I think. But, you know, now it's a little different, and it's not always three. Sometimes it's five, sometimes it's two, you know, like I said, sometimes it's a text, sometimes it's a phone call, but it's a connection, which I feel is the most important piece, that we're getting outside ourselves and connecting. And like I said before, every time, no fail, every time I talk to someone else, get outside myself and ask that person how they're doing and tell me about your day. It's always so much better than whatever was going on, whatever chatter was going on in my brain. So it's just a great connection in between, you know, our busy lives. And it gives us sometimes just that anchor in a very turbulent life and world that we can live in. So and also I have to say the coolest thing, I got to share this really quick, is I also looked at the member list. And when it's a huge member list, I know, it's huge. But I often look for people with the same area code or an area code in Massachusetts, just because those are the ones I know. And there was a time when I looked, I started in the back and I looked for this people, just somebody with the area code. And I found this person and I called them cold call, didn't know who they were, cold call. Some of you might have heard this before. And, you know, I usually say, you know, where do you live? Because I just like to know where you are in Massachusetts. And they said, oh, I'm in the North Shore. And I said, oh, do you mind if I ask where? And they said, oh, I live in Peabody. And I said, well, I grew up in Peabody. Would it be okay if you just, like, told me the street that you're on? And she told me Elizabeth Lane. Yes, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Lane, that's a street I grew up on. She's much younger than me, so she wasn't there when I was there. But that sometimes will happen. Those amazing things will happen. It's like, and I spoke to this person who literally was living on the street I grew up on. You just never know. You never know what your phone call will be, who it will be to, what it will bring up, what it will do for another person. But it was an awesome experience that I felt I had to share. So thanks.
Okay, next up we have Sue L. with a question followed by Sarah. Good morning, Sue.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for your service. Darian, fantastic presentation. Thank you so much. I got so much out of it. My question is, do you have a meditation practice? And if so, has that contributed to your sense of inclusion to your higher power, the human race, the greater good? If you could just speak to that, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yes, my meditation practice, it just varies. You know, I know many people will take a certain amount of time every morning to put aside, and that's beautiful. And I envy those people. I don't want to envy, but I do. But I do envy those people that put aside time. I do pray in the morning, and I get quiet for a time. And then there's other times when I'm doing something and it doesn't involve anything mindful, and I will focus on my higher power. You know, I think I also just tend to connect throughout the day with my higher power too, and say little prayers. You know, God help me. Or please show me, or just help, or just, you know, it's that connection that we have, I think, that's most important versus the way we do it, you know. Like it says, I think somewhere in the big book, or I don't know, I've heard it before, like, it doesn't matter how you pray as long as you do, you know. It doesn't matter whether you... how you meditate, as long as you do. It's just, it's important for me to stay connected throughout the day with my higher power and just in my breath. You know, sometimes it's just in my breath. I have had spurts, if you will, of meditation. It's funny, when I go through the steps and I'm in step 11, I just get that sort of rejuvenized feeling that I should spend 15 minutes or whatever. I know there's apps that you can, you know, put on your phone, and I have one on my phone that will give me some guided meditation, and I've used those before too, you know. So I guess it just, you know, it's a very personal thing, and it's good. It's good, and it does make me feel close to my higher power, you know, because then I can just listen. You know, that's really what meditation is all about, is listening. So I hope that helped.
Okay, next up we have Sarah, followed by Catherine. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service, Larry. And Darian, thank you so much for your talk today. It really spoke to me. I really struggled with some of the same things that you talked about. And the part of the talk that really spoke to me was, I think it's, I honestly don't know if it's the big book or the 12 and 12, where it talks about the bitter morass of self-pity. And for me, self-pity was the most isolating thing for me. And my question has to do with working with others. I'm working currently with several different newcomers, a lot of whom are really struggling in that same place, and almost have a real commitment and addiction and fight coming out of that self-pity, just really committed to the problem. And I know it worked for me. I know that it was service and working this program on every level. And of course, that's what I'm suggesting. But I wonder what works for you, and if you have other suggestions that I might carry forward. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you. So it's about working with others and, and, you know, helping them to see probably what's, well, not what's best for them, but maybe taking suggestions and doing things. And, you know, it's difficult. It is difficult. Desperation is a gift, for sure. And some people are more desperate than others. And some might be desperate for a time, and then it just seems like, well, but then there's just too much work to do, and maybe I'm just not that desperate. And so, you know, people can vary. I've sponsored many people over the years. And, you know, we can only do what we can do and what we know we can give them. You know, that's all that it comes down to. We don't have any more experience, strength, and hope than what we've been given, you know, and experienced. So we just do our best. We just do our best. And again, we need to make people feel like we're there for them. I'm not a sponsor who fires people. I don't let go of people quickly. And maybe that could be, you know, a problem. Because then, you know, you hold on, and maybe that space could be, you know, used with somebody that has more willingness. I'm sure. But I just come from the place of knowing that this disease is cunning, baffling, powerful, patient, and it's not easy. It's not easy to give up the food, and it's not easy to follow direction, and it's not easy to be willing on a daily basis to do certain things. So, you know, I can offer the help and really be there for them. And then we hang up the phone, and it's up to them and their higher power, right? So it's not me. I cannot be their higher power, nor would I ever want to be. So it's really just giving it up to God and knowing. And also, there have been times when I've just known, and they knew too, that the relationship probably wasn't working out, that maybe there was someone different from me that would be better for them, a better fit, or that they just needed more time. I hate to say that, though, but more time, more research in the food. And it's painful. It's painful when people leave and they go out there and they do that research, you know. But many of them come back and they teach me a huge lesson of where I don't want to be just for a day at a time. So, you know, it varies because we're human. We're human. And like I said, again, that apathy comes in and we just want to be lazy, comfortable, you know, or we know it all or whatever, however the brain works. And so it just, you know, it takes time. It takes time and effort and, and willingness and patience. But it's important. It's important to work with others. It's just, to me, it's non-negotiable to work with others because that's how I get what I need to, because it's always a two-way street. And a lot of times they'll say things I need to hear and help me to sort of reflect and look at my program. And then it also just feels really good to walk someone through and just see the transformation that they make from beginning to, you know, to the end of those steps. So thank you.
Thanks, Sarah. Okay, before we go to Catherine, just keep in mind if you have a question for Darian, we're going to give you one more opportunity to press star one and ask that or give me your name. So with that, Catherine, it's your turn. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can. You bet.
Okay. Thank you so much for your share. I'm sorry I didn't hear the beginning of it, but my question is, you sound really committed to your higher power, like that comes first and everything kind of comes from that. And I just was wondering, is that something that you felt from like day one? You might have already covered it in your share, and I'm sorry if I'm, but I'd love to hear if that was something that you felt certain about from day one and have always felt certain about, or have there been times when you feel sort of lost and sort of frustrated by what that even means and what it does mean to you, if that makes sense? That's kind of my question. Has it always been there? Was that something that you have ever struggled with? Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. That's an excellent question. I do have to say, when I first came in 1986, in a room full of 200 people, and my beautiful sponsor, who's tall, thin, and had everything I wanted, those were my higher powers. Yeah, I didn't necessarily want that, but I couldn't imagine in the very beginning God helping me with my food. I mean, in my head, God had way more important things to deal with, and it wasn't my food addiction, and so I put power in the group, and I put power in my sponsor, and not suggesting that anyone do that, but there is an enthusiasm and a love that comes from that person or the group of people that we, you know, when I hop on these meetings and then I, you know, hang up the phone, do I feel worse than I never feel worse. I always feel better. I always feel lifted up. And so I think that for me, my belief is higher power speaks through people. We're vessels of, you know, transforming that information. And it's just an amazing thing if we're open and willing to listen to that, you know. So in the very beginning, from day one, no, I didn't. I grew up, like I said, in the Jewish religion, but really it stopped at 13. I got bat mitzvahed and all my religious, you know, teachings were done. I was done. And like I said, it just became about the food at different holidays. And that was my religion. And, you know, I believe there was something greater than me, but I didn't tap into it. You know, I wasn't affiliated with any anything. And when I came to this program and I was told, you know, to ask for help, to get on my knees, wow, really? We don't do that, do we? You know, I did that. I did it anyway. I was told to get a practical guide, something that I could relate to, you know, it could be love, it could be the spirit of the universe, it could be our heartbeat, you know, but just something other than ourselves that we can count on a daily basis when we are feeling lost, like you said, or frustrated, or we just don't have the answers, you know, to what's going on, you know. And hindsight's always 20/20. When I look back, I see so much clearer how my higher power worked in my life. In the moment, it's really hard sometimes to think that we're being held up and we're being guided, you know, like the footprints prayer of God carrying us through a situation. But looking back, I have so many examples of being carried that why do I even begin to not believe that my higher power is working in my life a day at a time? So I think it gets stronger, and we can have periods where it will wane, but we can sort of get back on that spiritual beam by doing certain things, by maybe picking up a newcomer, you know, picking up a sponsee, and sort of refreshing our program, talking to a new person, you know, refreshing our program that way, or just being, you know, present for others. Even outside of program, imagine that, outside of program. So being present, you know, for my Stephen, my boyfriend or my daughter, or, you know, just being there for others will just kind of give us that sort of recommitment. So I hope that helped.
Okay, so last opportunity, if you have a question before we call it a wrap this morning, so press star one if you'd like to pose a question.
Christina J.
Christina Lisa, and Hanayeta.
Lisa M.
And Lisa.
Penny C, if there's time.
Penny, there's always time for you. Not anybody else, no, but for you. We got it. So let's go with that. We got four. We got Christina, Hanayeta, Lisa, and Penny. Christina, what question do you have?
Morning, Darian. Thank you for your
share. Good morning.
Since you got it right away, so to speak, I know there was things that you got later, but you put the food down and never picked it up. What is your experience, and what is your sort of plan when one of your sponsees keeps relapsing? Do you have a thing you do, take them back to step one, you know, that kind of a thing? And since you've worked with a lot of relapsers, I'm sure that you understand from that aspect what that might be like. But is there or are there different methods depending on the person you're working with to sort of help them, guide them back to really getting that food down so they can work the rest of the program and what you have discovered over time, that deep walk with God? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for no math questions. yes, I... you know, yeah, I mean, the most natural thing we can do is eat. It's unnatural to not, if we're a overeater and a food addict, you know. So relapse, yeah, it happens. And like I said in my share, I'm not one to let go of people easily. So I will, you know, give them, like I said, maybe the tool, like, just can you hold on to those tools? Can you make those phone calls today? Can you go to a meeting today? Can you write down some things before you pick up the bike? Can you, you know, can you read some of the literature and maybe jot down a few things that you relate to? Are there things you can do in place of picking up the food that are more constructive versus destructive? Most of the time they're willing, because I feel like if they're still calling you, then they're still kind of desperate. I mean, there are times when they just stop calling. And that's so sad, because we really worry about you guys out there. You know, I know I do. If I haven't heard from somebody in a while, or someone stops calling, so it's not easy, and it is very personal. you know, people are going through situations in their life, I'm sure. But you can give them the hope that you have being lifted out of relapse. And you can give them your time and your listening ear. Because sometimes that's all people want, or they really want to believe that there's somebody out there that really cares about them. And I think that's more important than, like, the goal of abstinence or not picking up again or not going back out into relapse. I think the goal, for in my eyes anyway, the way I see it, is that you can be there for them, again, so that you can make them feel included. Because when you're in the food, especially when you know what the abstinence and good feeling felt like and you're back in the food, that's a very lonely place. That's a very despairing place. And if you can just be there as just a good-natured human being, letting them know that you'll guide them when they're ready and that you'll be there for them no matter what, and that you totally understand and that there is a way out and there's hope and there's a little pot of gold at the end of the rainbow they can, you know, actually get. That, you know, that's, to me, that's the best part of, you know, sponsoring somebody, especially if they're having problems and struggling. Thanks for asking, Christina.
Okay, Hanayeta, it's your turn. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Larry. Thank you for your service always. And Darian. Oh, I love it. And I love looking at your picture while you were talking. you talked at the beginning about, they said, oh, well, you're unique. You know, you don't have to be like everybody else. But that's what we always wanted, to be like everybody else. We didn't want to be unique. But, you know, they talk about terminal uniqueness in programs and how that is not a good thing. That we, you know, we can't think that we're so unique that we can't relate to what other people are thinking or feeling or doing. So did that cause you any difficulty in program of, so you didn't want to be unique, which is a good thing in program, but did the unique part of it, of you're different than anybody else, did that ever cause you any problems or difficulties?
That
makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. I'd like to say, I think I read it in a piece of AA literature that all of us have clay feet, that we're all, you know, none of us should be put up on a pedestal and revered as, you know, an OA princess, although I'd love to be. You know, so I feel sometimes that when that starts happening, when people are like, oh, you know, I mean, I want people, it's a catch 22, right? I want people, obviously, I'm an approval seeker, so I want people to like me. And I want people to, you know, think of whatever I said or did as, you know, cool or awesome. But, you know, I also, on the other end, want to be humble and I want to sort of just be a part of, right, a part of the group. I want to be part of the group. I don't want to be, like, put up in any way. I think some of us, and like I say, envy and jealousy got in the way a lot of times and can still get in the way, where I can look at somebody and listen to them or see them, and I want what they have. I have no idea, like, what their life's like, but to me, on the outside, they look perfect. So I want what they have. And then I think to myself, well, it might not really be what it appears to be. And most of the time it isn't. And so I don't want to put anyone in this program up on a pedestal. I personally want to believe that we all are equal in the fellowship, Right. It says that there are no stars or VIPs. That's part of the anonymity tool, the long version. There are no stars or VIPs. We simply come together as compulsive overeaters. And I love that. I love that because, I mean, you can feel unique in what you do, maybe outside a program or, you know, what you accomplished in your life. I mean, there's nothing wrong with feeling good about who you are and what you've brought to this world. But I also want to keep sort of that humble attitude of I'm one amongst many. I'm just a bite away. Yes, I'm a bite away, just like everybody else. I have this one day, this one moment. I had an abstinent breakfast. God willing, I'll have an abstinent dinner. I mean, at lunch and then dinner. I'm not worried about it today. It's not like I'm not white knuckling. Ah, but I, and, you know, but still, I only have one day. That's all we have. We don't know. We don't know. We're not promised tomorrow. And so, if we can just, for me anyway, you know, if I can just continue to think that way, and keep it in the moment, keep it in the day, you know, then I can be who I am. And do what I need to do and go about this life just trying to be a good person a day at a time. So I hope that helped.
All right. So we've got two more and then we'll wrap up. We got a question from Lisa followed by Penny. Lisa, good morning.
Hi, this is Lisa, recovered compulsive overeater just for today from Virginia. And thanks, Darian, for your share. And thanks, everyone, for your service here at the meeting. And my question is around COVID. So you mentioned the sense of camaraderie that you've had with your fellows and how they were present at so many of the key events of your life. And I came into the rooms in July of 2020 when the world was shut down. So there was no in-person meetings. Everything was Zoom. Everything was phone. And I have not necessarily found that sense of camaraderie. I do talk to fellows. I have made connections, but to the point where they're like present in my life, like you had talked about. I was wondering if you had any point, and I know the world is kind of opening back up and things are slowly kind of getting back to normal, but I was just wondering what if you had any pointers or anything like that around getting that kind of sense of fellowship and camaraderie that you explained and that you talked about for those who maybe did not have the pleasure of in-person meetings when they first came into OA.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very odd, but when I went to the conference in New Jersey back in November, that was the first time since before COVID that I was at an in-person venue, if you will. It was very odd. I have since COVID, well, I moved out to the western part of the state. I'm from the Berkshires. I'm in the western part of the state near close to upstate New York. And so I moved away from my home group, which I went to, you know, on a regular basis, still goes on a Saturday morning, and other meetings that I went to in the area, I would drive to at night. You know, I left that area. I'm 3-ish hours away. So it wasn't, in my mind, I was going to drive there early Saturday morning, but it didn't happen. So I kind of experienced that feeling, of not having the hugs. I miss the hugs and the, you know, the chit chat after the meeting and the, you know, sometimes we'd hang out, go somewhere afterwards. And so, you know, I miss that. I do. And it was amazing when the conference was just, I loved hugging people and seeing people. But you know, we're not all fortunate to have, face-to-face meetings at our fingertips. There's no face-to-face meetings really out this way. And so I continue to either do them on Zoom or the phone. And I have, you know, a beautiful meeting that I attend on Saturdays, that give me, you can find a meeting. I know there's so many meetings in this. I mean, COVID was awful. There was nothing good about COVID except one little silver lining, as it gave us Zoom and it gave us connection with the world for our meetings, you know. And so yesterday in the Saturday morning meeting that I'm on, someone from Germany came on. I don't know how they found the meeting. I don't know. But there they were from Germany. It's like, wow, that wouldn't have happened going to my, unless they were visiting from Germany. So COVID opened up those opportunities for us to be connected from wherever we are. It's amazing to me. That was the silver lining, in my opinion. And so, you know, it might be that you find some other meetings besides maybe this phone meeting or just recorded meetings or things like that. There might be a group or a particular day of the week that you can hop on a Zoom meeting and then, you know, maybe make that something that you do on a regular basis so you can get to know the people and feel that sense of camaraderie, you know, that you're missing and that you so deserve. Because I do, I feel that. I feel that at some of the other meetings I go to too, and this one, you know, is a wonderful meeting on a daily basis. I can't believe I go to a meeting every day. It's every day and I listen to it every day. It's so awesome. So it's, you know, it's really, there's so much available to us to be able to feel connected. I think that's what it is. We have to put a little effort in to find ways to feel connected, but once we do, we'll know. And you know, take my phone number, give me a call. I'm happy to share with you other meetings. There's so many opportunities for us to have these healthy OA meetings available to us. You know, and this meeting is a healthy OA meeting. It's been a wonderful part of my program since I moved out here. Never thought a phone meeting it would do it for me. That was my thought, you know, because in those days it was face to face only. But it's just, I love this meeting, you know, and again, there's many other meetings as well that you can feel comfortable in and become a part of.
All right. Penny Lane is in our ears and in our eyes. Okay, everyone dropped off, Penny. But I'm listening to your question.
Go Celtics.
Good morning.
I was unmuting. What did you say?
I said go Celtics.
Oh, I just said go Celtics and you're in our ears and in our eyes, Penny Lane. So.
And Patriots. And Patriots, right, Darian? No, I'm Penny C. Recovered. And I realize there's not much time left, but I'm just really happy to hear Darian. Darian and I met in 1988 when we were committed to an every week AWOL for 13 months. So I was always so happy when I heard it back. And my question was going to be, and I'll call Darian, was how did she think she profited from that experience? But I know you don't have time now. So thank you, Larry, and Happy New Year, everybody.
Well, thanks, Penny. Darian, we'll stretch it a little bit. Do you want to comment briefly?
Yeah, just the experience of going through the steps for 13 months
for sure.
Together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to say any way you do the steps is do it. That's what was available to us in the day back in the 80s. And there were many around in Massachusetts. I don't know why, but these a way of life closed step meetings were available. And so the Big Book wasn't as much so. And if you did go to a Big Book meeting, it was a lot of, most of them were AA members. And so you didn't always feel like you could share from an OA point of view. So that was what was offered to us. And it was a blessing. I am always grateful to my sponsor. She told me from day one, you get into the steps. This is a 12-step program. You get into those steps. And I did. And I, you know, have gone through many of those close meetings. I've gone through the Big Book, you know, and then I continue to just to incorporate them in my program so that I can stay stopped a day at a time.
Well, thanks again, Darian, for your time this morning. We're so appreciative of your time, and so we're gonna wrap up the meeting and just stick around after the recording. We will get Darian's contact information if you'd like to call her. So we're gonna read from page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.